And we are back with episode 267 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, who has learned his lesson. I will never doubt the Brothers Nolan again.
This is Ronstam from Australia. Wait, no, I mean, no, I'm another guy. I have a, you know, I have an office places. I'm totally not Ronstam. No.
Oh, of course not. We are going to be talking about Person of Interest, and as you can probably imagine, it sounded like we're going to be very positive about it. We are also going to be talking about the return of Supernatural and the return of Arrow. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
We will be discussing all aspects of these episodes. Be warned that you will be spoiled, but we have waited at least a week or so before we do that, so you've had time to watch them.
That's right. And not to delay any further, once again, we're going to start off with Person of Interest. And here's the promo.
They stopped crying before it happens.
Well done, Finch.
But one of them has been captured.
I'm not letting the man in the suit slip away just because his license checks out.
Can his team break him out?
I'm engineering an escape plan.
Or will the FBI break him?
Keep pushing, hit a nerve.
Please, I just want to go home.
All right, and that is Person of Interest. Season 2, Episode 12, Prisoner's Dilemma. While Carter tries to maintain her cover as an FBI temporary agent while helping Reese, Fusco has to protect a new number on his own while Reese ducks some old enemies from the past. Yeah, wow, okay. So, little bit of a story here. When I saw this episode, I was actually off on business, and where I was, there was a bit of a time shift. I was in a different time zone, so the show was on a little bit earlier than usual. So when they went through their usual thing and it seemed like, you know, Carter went through all those hoops to try and make sure that Reese was let go and got away and Donnelly would not capture him and everything else, I wasn't really paying attention to the fact that there was still a good act left in the episode.
You weren't the only one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was I was so ready to be upset with this episode. But as Edmund, you put it, we learned... Don't doubt the Brothers Nolan.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah, this was a very nice way to play with audience expectation. I mean, they had me feeling like they were being very cliche, running through everything by the numbers, right down to the expectation that, yes, of course, who's going to help Reese through his problem but Elias? I called that one the previous episode and said, boy, him still being in prison means he's got to be running into Elias, right?
Yeah.
I just figured this was going right down the normal track. And then, no, of course not. They get complacent. And it turns out, no, Donnelly's not an idiot, but has been watching Carter the entire time and put the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's even more of a twist. And Edmund, I'm sure that you were just thrilled.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was a couple of things. Because there was so much action, you know, packed into the first three quarters of the episode. I mean, I was watching in my normal time zone and had the same reaction of, you know, between the interrogations and Elias showing up and Bear's owners showing up and, that wonderful little misdirection of Reese, you know, allowing himself to get beaten up, you know, just to show that, you know, no, he's not the man in the suit. You know, the moment Donnelly showed up, I mean, they went to commercial, and I assumed it was the end of the episode. and then realized, you know, no, wait a minute, there's 15 minutes left. And also, I also got lulled into the fact that, you know, yes, okay, we saw Annie Paris in the opening credits, but then it was all the flashback stuff. So I thought, you know, oh no, they're just filling in, you know, this background, you know, showing us, you know, sort of, you know, just how unstable she was, you know, and how Reese had to, you know, sort of manage his relationship with her, you know, and sort of, you know, come to these accommodations with her to keep things going, and that was the only reason she was there, and then to have that whole, you know, slam bang ending, you know, her, you know, literally roaring into the present, and and pulling that same dump truck maneuver which Reese had done last season. Except in her case, I mean, it's like, you know, one thing she was hitting the side Reese was on, so how could she even be sure he was actually going to survive? It was just another example of, you know, no, I mean, she is so over the top and so out of control. And, so to wind up with the episode essentially ending with, Reese in the hands of, you know, his equivalent of Root, you know, except, you know, he thought it was hard getting him out of prison, you know, prying him away from her is going to be, just ramping things up to a whole other level. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, it was sort of going from, you know, yeah, it's sort of, yeah, they got him out kind of as we expected, but, oh no, Donnelly caught up, and then just taking it to that whole other level of, you know, now, you know, and I'm really pissed off at CBS for the fact they came back for two episodes and now we're off for 3 weeks before we find out
sketchy.
How this resolves itself. But yeah, I mean, this was just all that stuff at the end, I mean, really just took this up to a whole other level. I mean, I was really enjoying it, but, you know, leading up to that, in terms of the way, you know, they were taking all of these, you know, long-standing elements and melding them together. But then to throw that in on top of it was an amazing ending.
Yeah, Bronstam, how about you? Any further thoughts on this?
Well, apparently I was slightly more positive on the first three acts or four acts or whatever of the episode, because I was really enjoying it right up to the the big twist in the tail. I thought, I mean, even just watching the credits flash by, just all those names, people that I knew, this is going to be a good one. And, I wasn't disappointed in the slightest. I love that, just like in the previous episode, they came up with a creative way of getting into Reese's backstory and the, you know, like his personality, the kind of stuff that he's very reticent to talk about or reveal through this device of his most legitimate cover identity, and the fact that, you know, Carter, having learned that it was designed to be as similar to Reese's real identity as possible to make it easier to gel the details, she just really blatantly takes advantage while in the meantime trying to play off Donnelly and these three other suspects. It was that in itself, I thought, was really interesting and quite tense. Although I was and I liked how they Carter in particular was starting to point the fact that Donnelly was going a bit off, you know, sliding a bit off the slippery slope in his desire to try and catch the man in the suit. And then all of these bad guys showing up was just this nice bonus. It's always great when Elias is around, and having the Aryans be there and the Office of Special Counsel's thug, it added even more tension. And then the whole thing seems to wrap up, and they frame it like it's the end of the episode. And I thought, you know, okay, that was a cool, you know, it didn't resolve the cliffhanger quite as spectacularly as the Root two-parter from the beginning of the season did, but we got a lot of good character beats out of it, and so that was fun. And then Donnelly, you know, comes out of nowhere, and it was like it was nice to see that character validated again as one of the most capable antagonists for Reese and Finch, and to just have him like really play Carter and play Reese, and that was cool. And then Stan showing up at the end was a big surprise. I love the way that was set up, just Finch walking down the street and the phone start ringing. I mean, when it started, what I expected was that it would be the machine just calling with some other random, you know, a bit like the contingency at the start of the episode. It's we're not gonna, you know, not worrying about Reese, instead just carry on with the mission, and that Finch would have a choice to make. But then when he looks it up and it's Donnelly's name, it was just like, oh, yeah. was a hell of an episode.
No, I was going to say, no, just about the phone thing. I also loved as I took it as a shout out to Neuromancer, because I know that's the book where I first remember that device of, you know, when he's walking through the airport, I think, and all the phones start ringing right when he passes them. And, you know, so if that's what they had in mind, which I think it probably was, that was a nice little shout out. And yeah, I mean, I realized I didn't quite make clear. I mean, yeah, I was more positive about the first three quarters of the episode than I think John was. I was really enjoying the interplay with Reese and Carter, and her taking advantage of her situation to get some more information about him. And I just love that thing of, you know, Donnelly handing her the earbud, and, you know, so he can get inside her head. And of course it meant, you know, no, she had both of them in her head. basically taking her one way or the other. And and of course there's the one element we haven't even mentioned yet, which was also, you know, was brief but still great, was the fact that there was in fact a number that came up this week that Fusco had to handle all on his own.
Oh my god, that was awesome.
You know, I just hope that, you know, because you mentioned watching the opening credits, and it's like, you know, okay, yeah, so what the heck is Caroline Kirkova going to do with this? And it's like, oh, okay, just play herself getting rescued by, you know, rescued by Fusco, who, you know, has been sort of, you know,
just
you
gets
know,
gets to apparently have the most awesome adventure that we never yeah. see. Like those glimpses were fantastic, but I don't know. The king is still that one of just in the middle of the firefight with Yamin. He's just like, go, I'll cover you. And he stands up and he's got the two guns and he's yes. just going. Like, it's especially given how tense everything else in the episode was, you just sort of needed that moment to laugh and punch the air. Yeah. It was.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And it was just the whole sequence of moments, you know, sort of, you know, like when he first gets the call and he's sort of like, you know, reluctant, saying, oh, do I have to? You know, then he sees the picture. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm completely on this. Yeah. The weird thing was that there was so much going on in the other sides of the episode. I mean, the whole thing with Carter really being between a rock and a hard place, and everything going on with Reese, and, you know, Finch getting more and more desperate for something to go right. that the stuff with Fusco seemed vaguely ridiculous. And I understand that they were doing it very cannily, because ultimately it was to completely throw you off your guard, because, you know, everything else is going the way that it should. And then there's this stuff that's going on that's just absolutely goofy. And it really felt out of place, but it was very nicely done, like I said, to throw you off the scent, to make you think that everything's going to be perfectly fine, because look at how silly this, you know, thing going on with Fusco is. And it was nice little comic relief going along. But this season, they've been really doing a little bit of that. After really showing how good they are at doing the show anyway, I think that they've just decided they're going to have fun with this as much as possible. And this was one of those moments where they said, you know, we really want to do this because it would be completely silly to do it, but let's do it in the middle of one of the most tense episodes we have. Let's just really do it in the most atonal time possible. But then I really felt like they didn't do it just with him, because did anyone else just start laughing out loud when Finch strapped on the riot gear to assault the prison?
Absolutely. That was fantastic.
I was like, really? I want to see that episode. The heck with the actual plot. Give me that. So, but yeah, it definitely was one of those episodes that I think was designed to defy your expectations in all the best ways. I don't know that I would give it a 10, but I definitely give it a 9. How about you, Bronstein?
I would go to the 9. It was just wall to wall. Great stuff. This was person of interest firing at full cylinders in the other way. Like, I mean, last week we had it in one way where it can just use the episodic procedural elements of the show to tell a really good character story. This was going the other way. This was really building on the mythology, all the character development, the intrigue, the surprises, and it was just it was awesome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that actually puts it up as the top episode of the season so far, which I think is fair.
I can buy that.
Yeah, no, my review, and I stick by it, was I did give this one a 10. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was fairly clear from your commentary, but thank you for reminding me. Yeah, this actually just edges out Bad Code as the top episode so far, and I think that putting those two at the top of the season makes perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, then we are going to move on to a show that we always look forward to, and that would be Supernatural, and here's the promo.
On January 16th, Supernatural returns.
I need both of you to stow your crap.
We have a situation.
If you missed a moment, catch up on episodes at CWTV.com.
Yes, you okay?
What did you do to me?
Ooh boy, okay. And Bronstein, why don't you go ahead and give us the recap here.
Alrighty, Supernatural Season 8, Episode 10. Torn and Frayed. Naomi informs Castiel that Crowley holds an angel captive, and he must save him so that Crowley doesn't learn their secrets. Castiel asks for Dean's help. Sam meets with Amelia, who asks him to choose whether to stay with her or never contact her again. Okay. I like the Castiel stuff. I wasn't so hot on the Sam stuff.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll start with the Sam stuff. Yeah. Surprising. I know. But yeah, this feels like it's not. It's just not working as a literal thing. I think that the whole it was much more interesting when absolutely every aspect of these flashbacks was indicating that no, it was some fabrication or some weird thing like that. So like, meeting the character in the flesh is just kind of boring, and we know that Sam's not gonna choose to stay because it's episode 10, and like we just came back from the hiatus. Like it just not interesting. Didn't work in the slightest.
It hasn't worked all season.
Far more interesting was the Castiel stuff because Castiel is always awesome, and we get this a bit more of whoever the hell this Naomi person is, and the fact that she's dispatching Castiel on these secret missions. I'm very, very intrigued about how and why this is happening. And then on top of that, we actually get into it. We sort of have Crowley messing about in the operating system of an angel. The terminology was interesting, but I was, you know, for those few moments, I was kind of with Crowley. I'm just like, yeah, keep pressing. I want to find out more about what the hell's going on. I like this idea that there is more to angels and how and why they were built than we necessarily know. And part of it is, of course, the fact that apparently there is an angel tablet. And this potential vision of a future for the supernatural verse where there's just simply no angels and no demons running around on Earth.
Yeah. Which would be one way to end the series.
It would separate the show's OTP, which seems to be Dean and Castiel, but
I broke this one down to two different plot lines, three really, but they were pretty awesome. I mean, you had Crowley torturing an angel, really to see what made him tick. Castiel learning that he's basically in a celestial version of the dollhouse, which is kind of creepy when you think about it. Actually, it's just creepy in general. But then you have the whole thing with Sam, which I agree was a complete waste of time. But it's been a waste of time all season. So I think that it's very consistent in that it's been the least exciting thing and the least convincing thing. And maybe the writers realized that and just decided, hey, let's just cut this off at the pass while we have an opportunity to do it. Because it seemed like this was another example of writers trying to defy expectation, because everything from the previous episode, Citizen Fang, back during the hiatus, left things very tenuous. It felt like the brothers were going to pretty much go their separate ways for a little while, and all at the worst possible time, because Castiel has been given this whole, you know, mission from Naomi, and it basically her orders were to stick by the Winchesters because they're going to help you with your mission. And that wouldn't be so good if it wouldn't be all that great for him if everything went to heck with the Winchesters. Well, by the end of this episode, everything is kind of on the mend. I mean, not really there, but getting there. And it was a little fast, but it couldn't be fast enough for Sam's plot line, so I guess it worked out in the end. I'm kind of all over the place with what I'm saying, because I'm trying to explain where I'm going with how I scored this one, because I really like the stuff with Castiel. What occurred to me as I was thinking about this is that Naomi really sounds like she's running things up in heaven right now.
That was the implication she gave off when she first turned up.
Right.
This thing of like, you know, in the time you've been gone, there's been a regime change.
Yeah.
And now there is this kind of vaguely CEO-esque personality. It's kind of like they're doing Dick Roman for the Angels with a slightly different vibe. Just the very clean office and the very business-like approach Well, you know, I say CEO. I say it's like halfway between a CEO and a, you know, deputy director of an intelligence organization.
Right.
Which kind of ties into whatever the hell Castiel is doing.
Yeah. Well, what worried me when I thought about it was that, you know, you might assume that an angel would take over up there. It's a fair enough assumption, right? Only Naomi isn't exactly an angelic name. most of the angels have a name that ends in L. I mean, that's kind of the way it works. She doesn't. So who the heck is this? What puts her in charge of heaven?
Yeah.
Assuming that wherever the hell she is heaven.
Heaven,
she
yeah.
summons right. him somewhere, and she talks to him, and then she messes with his memory so that he thinks whatever the hell she's ordered him to do is his own idea.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he assumes she's told him that she's in heaven and that there's been this regime change. It's never really commented on whether or not he believes her, because he gets no chance to believe her. He forgets about her every time he leaves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
So who is?
I don't
this?
Know.
What the heck's going
Clearly
on
she's,
here?
Obviously, she's one of the Silent.
I guess so.
I don't know.
Cass
needs an eye patch.
Be nice. Yeah. There you go. That'll work out pretty well.
But yeah, this it's a very insidious mystery, and it puts more emphasis on Castiel as part of the DNA of this season. Like, he felt very removed from season 7. Because he obviously wasn't around much, and even during season 6 there were big chunks where he just wasn't around. It wasn't until late in the season that they turned around and said, "Yeah, the reason there's been a good reason why he hasn't been around. It's sort of important."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
So yeah, it's interesting, and now I'm trying to rack my brain and think of, like, you know, is she operating, you know, operating independently? Is she exactly what she says she is? Is she something that has managed to pull the ultimate con on the angels and actually get herself installed?
Mm.
Yeah, no, the other thing that I found intriguing was that, you know, the little hints that Alfie was dropping, you know, about, you know, now, you know, that things have changed and it's not, you know, it's not quite what you think, you know, which would certainly say, you know, seem to be implying that, you know, yeah, there's adding to the implications that there's something not quite right with Naomi. But of course, he didn't I don't think he actually named her. So it was, you know.
So the Book of Supernatural, verse 1984.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was certainly happy to see, you know, see the focus get back to Castiel and see him, you know, becoming a major part of whatever's going on. So that bodes well. And certainly, I mean, if this is the end of, you know, of Sam's little dalliance, you know, just, you know, which it certainly seemed to be. It's like, you know, yeah, I think the writers have made the right move there, because, you know, whatever they were planning, you know, just the complete lack of chemistry, even now, was, you know, just glaring. So.
I mean, besides the Castiel stuff, we also had Dean deciding for various reasons to cut things off with Benny.
Yeah.
And even if it didn't seem like it led up very well to that point, I still liked it for the implication that he's doing this for his brother. He's doing this because that's what's important to him. But boy, is there really no worse time for him to decide that he's not going to be the sponsor for his vampire friend anymore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That just is not going to end well. It's going to come back on him big time. And he's probably going to wind up having to kill Benny before the season is over. But then you put that against that sacrifice against what Sam is giving up. And it's like, okay, so let me get this straight. Sam, you fell in love with this woman who then found out that her previous love was still alive. She went back to him. And it was based on that you were available to go running around with Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't you pretty much decide already that you had to let her go?
Yes.
So what's the big deal? All this time, I kind of was operating under the assumption that they had been together, and he kind of got ripped away from his old life with her, and that's why he was so upset with having to be off on the road for so long trying to deal with this problem so he could just get back to Amelia. But he'd already given her up.
Yes.
So it doesn't make sense. Never mind the fact that, as I recall, the season started with him rolling out of bed and she was there. How does that make sense if he had already said goodbye to her? What's going on, writers? Because you did a good job with the Castiel stuff, you did fine with Dean stuff, what the heck? The stuff with Sam and Amelia is all over the map. It hasn't been believable at all. So I'm glad that the stuff with Castiel was so strong in this episode, because I would have taken a lot more off for the Sam stuff, but I was feeling very generous. Bronstone, what do you think? Is there... Am I missing something?
I'll go with... I don't know. It's just the more I think about the whole Amelia thing, it's just like, this should be some sort of Bigman of his imagination storyline. Mm-hmm. Even the name.
Yeah.
And the fact that his memories are getting, you know, bonked. There's a Naomi connection here.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice. That would work out well.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
If, I don't know. Like, the fact that I'm having to sit back and try and put pieces together to make this plotline make some sort of sense and be relevant to the story. Like, it's the bad version. This is the bad version of that. I mean, we go back to Fringe, and we're talking about the fact that they give you the subtle details so that you can put together the story, kind of put together these elements of the story yourself. You're sort of telling yourself the story while they've moved on to something else.
Mm.
This is not that. This is the bad version of trying to make you do the work.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. And I could almost see... You've been saying this since the beginning of the season. And now I can see that would work out with the whole Naomi thing, and I might give them a little bit of a pass if that's what it turns out to be. Because, okay, her name is Amelia. The big thing between him and Dean last season was that Dean killed Amy. Amy Pond, Amelia. Okay. Yeah. I kind of get all that. But the
there's
way
the fact that there's
playing
the fact
it
that
just
they,
doesn't
they,
work.
And then there's the fact that they met under basically identical circumstances. The most important person in their life was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they apparently glomped onto each other. Even, like, wasn't her husband's name Don? Or something like that? Started with D. And then she finds out he's alive.
Right.
Like, the
that's why I thought that it had to be something else going on, because it just doesn't make any sense.
Have they changed their minds halfway along the way, you know, and decided something like that? Is there still a thing in motion and they've just taken way too long to pull the trigger on it? Or have the writers of Supernatural Season 8 accidentally created a really interesting subplot, like, completely by mistake?
They stumbled onto brilliance. Is that what
happens.
You're saying?
Yeah. It happens. The reason why Guy Gisborne was the most interesting character on the BBC version of Robin Hood, complete accident. The writers and the actor were operating on completely different wavelengths, and any time they tried to get on the same track, the writers would change things. So is that what's happening?
It may be.
It may just be. Yes.
I mean, we'll find out. But I gave this episode an 8 only because I really am happy with where things are going with Castiel. And unlike what we were talking about last show with Lost Girl, the subtle stuff between Dean and Castiel continues to be just funny. Because they play it completely straight, yet the subtext is the subtext. But yeah, I think that I was also happy that maybe they're finally going to let go of this whole Sam and Amelia thing.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you, Edmund?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of torn because, you know, yeah, I mean, it was as egregious as the Sam and Amelia stuff was, the fact that they did seem to be ending it, I think, will push me to an 8 as well for the good stuff that was happening elsewhere.
And Bronstam, how about you?
I can't go as high as an 8. I'll go as a 7.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, well then, we're going to round this one out with the third and final show that we're going to discuss, and that would be Arrow. And here's the promo.
This man in the hood, where has he been for the past 6 weeks?
I need your help. The whole idea of being a vigilante was due to the police's job.
I'm a killer.
All right, and Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give us the recap here?
Sure. This is Arrow Season 1, Episode 10, Burned. Oliver, his confidence undermined by his defeat at the hands of the Dark Archer, goes up against a psychologically traumatized firefighter. The man has started committing acts of arson while calling himself Firefly. Meanwhile, Thea tries to cheer her mother up, and Tommy throws a benefit for the firefighters. Nice return from their break. You know, we do often talk. Last episode, we were talking about, you know, once upon a time with characters, you know, sort of not doing things that made sense. And, you know, and it was nice in this one to see, you know, yeah, Oliver being still, you know, a little traumatized from his beat down and, you know, having a little trouble getting back on his feet and trying to, you know, get back in the game. I mean, I particularly like, you know, them, you know, I mean, literally having, you know, that, you know, when he does catch up with the Firefly the first time and sort of, you know, in standard superhero mode, it's like, you know, no, that firefighter is hanging by his hand, you know, would have been saved, but, you know, no, he's, you know, still a little bit off his game, so that, you know, that guy does go down in the flames, and then, you know, in fact, he finds he can't stop this week's villain. So I thought they were playing that up particularly well, and you know, and also, you know, just, you know, certainly really establishing, you know, Diggle as you know, his sort of his conscience and motivator, and you know, just you know, building that relationship up some more. And as the show has been doing, I mean, continuing to balance the, you know, the superhero stuff and then, you know, the relationship and family stuff. I mean, kind of on all levels. Thea trying to break her mother, you know, out of her depression, I thought was particularly well done, and then the interplay as well, Lauren and her dad, you know, her, you know, actually reaching out to the Hood, you know, stealing the phone, and you know, sort of, you know, starting to build up that relationship, which, you know, knowing what we know about the characters down the line, was. You know, I thought was nicely done as well. So I'll let you guys jump in, but yeah, I was rather pleased with this episode.
Yeah, I have to say that I was a little bit surprised at how well they came back. Not that I thought that the show wasn't capable of it, but they did such a nice job with the previous episode that I was wondering, how are they going to bring this back? Are they going to have Oliver come back and just be back in the game or not? And then I really liked that they had this 6-week gap, which. If the writers didn't know they were going to have a winter hiatus right there, then yeah. It was serendipity. I mean, it was really good because the viewers were kind of coming back wondering what was going to happen next, and Oliver was still reeling from his physical and psychological scars from that encounter. And I thought it was really smart to have him go up against somebody that wasn't necessarily a big major supervillain, so to speak, but something a little more mundane. A firefighter that kind of lost his mind and wanted revenge. And it was relatively simple. It was dangerous, but it was still manageable. And it did a lot to reframe how people are seeing him in the public eye. And therefore, you've got Laurel looking at him differently, which there's been this nice slow progression of her attitude changing about him, where now I think that maybe her father might have miscalculated, because even though he's putting her out there as bait, and it's not that dangerous. I mean, he can kind of justify it because, yeah, I'm gonna keep tabs on the guy in the Hood or Arrow or whatever they're gonna call him next week by having her keep in contact with him, because he keeps going out of his way to keep her safe.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, I would think that that would kind of be a red flag, but they've kind of done enough earlier in the season to throw him off of Oliver's scent. But, boy, okay, so he's basically saying to Laurel, oh, yeah, you know, maybe I was wrong about him, maybe you should stay in contact with him, you know, there's some things that he can do that we can't. Why don't you just feed her even more reasons to think that the Arrow is a hero? She's already getting the idea that he is capable of doing some good things that the police can't. And you can tell that she's being primed to become her own type of hero, even if she never does make the connection between Oliver and Green Arrow, just by the fact that she's becoming very used to this idea of vigilantes as heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and not only that, but I also felt that they were doing a little bit of groundwork in having Thea starting to suspect what's going on and see the Arrow as a hero. So we got to see a little bit better side of her with going to her mother and getting her mother out of her shell, which, okay, she didn't realize that her mother was so upset because she's about neck deep in whatever's going on with Merlin, but, you know, she still went out of her way to try and make things better, which goes against her characterization early on as this bratty, rich kid who's acting out because bad things have happened in her life. So I'm liking what they're doing with the characters in this episode, even as they are very intelligently taking things slow with Oliver getting back on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bronstum, how about you?
Yeah, I love the character development of this episode, not just Oliver, but the whole Guy in the Hood, Green Arrow persona. They're just them taking the time to have their non-superpowered superhero recover from getting his butt handed to him in a fight with a supervillain. Just it takes ages, and even then the physical thing is only one hurdle. Just having him overcome that whole psychological thing, I just thought it was a smart character-centric way of dealing with that kind of thing. It was really great to see, and it was cool to see how like you were saying, how the people of Starling City are, their perception of the Guy in the Hood is change. He's more than just some vigilante. He's running. He's trying to help people and succeeding, and being all super heroic and stuff. Like it's just really really cool. Yeah, that felt like the watchword of the whole episode. It's continuing to let these characters grow and change. It feels like pretty much all of them are very different at this point to what they were in the pilot.
Yeah, that's probably the real go-home message with this episode, is that it came back, and instead of just resting on its own successes, it's still growing. It's organically evolving before our eyes, and it's doing so at a pace that it's measured, but it's not tedious. It's taking its time, but it's still having forward momentum as it goes. It's a very tricky balance. And there are a lot of shows, even good shows, that don't necessarily get it right all the time. So I'm very impressed by this return. I know that the show continues to do very well. So I'm very happy with Arrow. This episode is very good. I just don't know that I have much more to say about it, because it's the kind of thing where I really just want people to go and watch the show.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the only thing we didn't touch on was, you know, the other thing they did well was... mixing in the flashbacks and
yes,
to the island, and showing once again the roots of where he's gaining all these abilities, and relating it directly to that time on the island when he was when it was early on and he was basically pushed pushed to the limit, but managed to get through it. I mean, as much by luck as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But showing, that sort of where he was, that ability to bounce back, and where some of that came from. So another element that other shows could completely fumble, that they also continue to really mix in well with the rest of the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, because the fact is that all of these pieces need to be put together in order for the show to be consistently moving in the right direction. And yeah, this is all this kind of stuff that has been working throughout the series up to this point. Just the strength in the writing and in the characterization. So I gave this one an 8, which is kind of ironic, especially considering the equivocation with Supernatural, but I really felt that they both did a really good job in different ways. But this was the more consistent 8 than the other. There was really nothing that was dragging it down in any way. It was just really doing very well on its own. How about you, Edmund?
I think I would. I'm between an 8 and a 9. I think I will stick with an 8, simply to give them room. Basically, this was partially, him, coming back from the injuries. So, you know, as you said, you know, not, you know, not a more middle of the road villain. But still just an excellent episode, but, with all they've been doing, I'm kind of expecting more down the road. So that's why I'll stick with the 8 for now.
Mm. And Bronstam, how about you?
Yeah. 8 sounds good for me. Like it was just incredibly solid. I love what it did with, just this really smart way of creating and building a superhero. And we got more of the island flashbacks, which I've wound up quite enjoying as the show's gone on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...